we can bring some biblical scripture or wisdom into our dialogue today. But I'm going to give you just a minute or two to write down whatever question you might have to offer, and I'm going to make an attempt to answer some of these questions you might have around theology or faith or growth or spirituality. So if you have something that's on your heart, please write it down on a card, and if anybody needs one, I've got a few here. And Karen's going to collect them, and she's going to be the moderator today, so... anybody need a card? Anybody who wanted one, get one? Okay. Oh, Kim, you're welcome. Then hearing one person in DeWinton this week said, it stumped the pastor. And you very well may stump the pastor. However, I hope if you stump me, it's something you want to, you know, it's something you're interested in pursuing. Keep score. Somebody's keeping score. How often I'm stumped, and which is frequent. So I've not heard these questions. I've not seen them beforehand, and I'm not going to see them now. Karen's just going to go through them and ask the question. If it doesn't go well, we won't be doing it again. Shuffle them or whatever you want. Okay.
We'll start with this one, and then if there's any similar,
you know.
Okay, I'm on.
Karen.
Thank you. Right. Do you think God and the Bible are capable of growth and change? This is retaining to how much humans, our land, tools and technology, etc., have changed over time. So do you think God and the Bible are capable of growth and change?
Oh, the short answer is yes, to a degree. I think... The Bible doesn't give us any specific or concrete answers to a lot of things that are taking place today. I think what the Bible does for us is it gives us principles about how to live. And if we follow these principles, they should be always contemporary and usable for today. However, there are some things that are taking place today that that the Bible never could have anticipated. And so I think we're better off, I've always said this, do not take the Bible literally. We take it spiritually or even figuratively and go deep. If we can go deeper into Scripture, we will find the basic principles that help us to live out life. So if something comes along like new technologies or whatever, if they are in the best interest of people and the earth, yes, the Bible does say that. Does it say something specific about technology or any of the other issues we're experiencing today? No, it doesn't. So I don't think it grows so much as gives us a foundation for how we are to live our life and deal with things at any time in history.
You that are kind of similar. It's the age-old questions about suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Why does the brain trip and fall so often with us disabled? Why does God choose not to perform miracles today?
Interesting. Repeat them, okay.
Why does the brain trip and fall so often with us disabled people? Why does God choose not to perform miracles today?
Okay, did you catch that? Keith, can you bring up her voice?
Okay, let me try it. If I have the mic here, is that better? Okay, sorry about that. Why does the brain trip and fall so often with us disabled people? Why does God choose not to perform miracles today? So those are kind of related, I thought.
Okay, why does the brain trip and fall? That's an interesting question. I think in the human experience, a couple weeks ago I said in my message that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. I might put that as we are spirit having a material experience, to be even more broad. So I think all of the capacities within the human condition are not mistakes, they are different experiences of being human. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not so much that the brain trips and falls, it's that our brains, all of our brains, work differently. They take in different information, they are conditioned to work differently. Just if you looked at anybody in this room, you'd say everybody has different belief system. It's just because our brains are all wired a little differently, and they work a little differently. And I think we need to maybe get rid of the label disability to say we are all able in some ways to do different things. I'm going to say that. Why doesn't God do miracles?
I'm just going to add another one there.
If God chooses our path, why does he choose for people to suffer?
Okay. I still think they're two different questions. So why doesn't God do miracles? God does miracles every single day. Every single day. The fact that I got up this morning and could breathe and live and gather in community and see the beauty outside, I mean, all of these things are miracles in themselves. When we say miracles where somebody snaps their fingers and something good happens, or that's what we think of as miracles, like an immediate healing or something like that, that's what we call magic, and God doesn't do magic. God heals in God's way. But I think just the fact that we're all here is a miracle. The age-old question of suffering, and it is an age-old question. And why does God, what is it again? Does God allow suffering? Or
yeah, why does God allow? If God chooses our path, why does he choose for people to suffer?
Okay, I'm going to say this just from my perspective. And this is the caveat I will give today. You do not have to believe anything I say. You do not have to take anything I say as truth, because I'm one person. You know, I have a certain background and certain experiences, as do you as well. I'm going to say this first and foremost. I don't think God chooses our path. And in which case, each path is unique, and often it's by our choice that things happen. Suffering happens in the course of being human. Suffering is a condition of all human lives. Without what we call suffering, and we put a value judgment on suffering, there's no value judgment to suffering, it just exists. Suffering exists. And the only thing usually that teaches human beings to change course or to grow is actually to suffer. Because when things are going well, we just want it to continue to go well, and we just want to cruise through life. Suffering is actually a benefit to humanity. It teaches us things. It teaches us compassion, empathy, and it grows us. There is a value to suffering. As much as we don't want it, it has value.
So here's a question about somebody in the Bible who suffered.
Mm-hmm.
Was Job a real person or a written story to teach us?
Oh, that's just basically a yes and no answer. Job was not a real person. The story of Job is a compilation of people who suffer to teach us what suffering is and to have this back and forth conversation with various characters and to get a sense of what suffering is and how Job responded to suffering as opposed to others responded to suffering. So Job is not an actual person. Job is a character in a little novella.
How do we, or you, define grace? How do we define grace?
Short answer to grace is getting something we don't deserve. Mm-hmm. It's really being offered, and it happens every day. So the short definition of grace is really being given something we don't deserve.
And giving others what they don't deserve when we give someone grace.
Yes, it's offering others, you know, forgiveness or anything like that, generosity, goodness, that sort of thing. Grace is just that sense of getting what we don't deserve. Justice is getting what we deserve.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Put your seatbelt on.
Okay.
If God isn't animal, vegetable, or mineral, how does God communicate? And who came up with the word God?
We came up with the word God, of course. God is just an English language word for that mystery that we can't quite understand. Originally, Hebrews wrote it as a YHWH, and we put vowels in and that sort of thing. God is just a term for something that is pretty much mystery, really, actually. It's just something we use because we humans always have to name something. And if God is an animal, mineral, vegetable, God to me is, well, you probably all have names for God. Source of being, first cause. I've heard all kinds of names. One of my favorite, light, love, that kind of thing. There's lots of names for G-O-D. And to me, God is that which animates all life. And so the best way to connect with God or to feel God's presence is only within us. Only within ourselves. You can sense God's work or see God's work in creation, but you can only sense God speaking within yourself. And that is getting in touch. One of the things is we push our energy so far out into the world that we don't even know what our own life energy is. Once we get a sense of our own connection to life and really delve into that, that's where we connect with God best. Not out there, in here, in our hearts, in our souls, whatever you say. Yeah.
I'm going to add one.
Yeah.
How do we know it's God talking?
The simplest answer to that one, to me, is you can't really know it's God talking, but if it is life-giving and loving and generous and forgiving, all of those kinds of things. If the impulse in us is life-giving, then we can say it is God. If we say, if it's something that compels us to do something that's selfish or harmful or anything like that, then we are not getting in touch with God.
What is the best way to get closer to God?
So sort of that follows on the previous question. It's number one answer, silence. I'm going to say, if you want to touch God, you have to get to that deep silence within and then touch God in that place where only God can be if we can touch it within ourselves. People are looking for God in all kinds of ways. This is what I said to Dwayne. Do you know what the number one God in the world is today? Capitalism. I said to somebody recently, if somebody were asked to give up God or their pension, it would be a tight race. The reality is these days that regardless of whether we say we are God followers, we follow a capitalist market most of the time. That's what we live in. That's what we swim in. We also swim in God, but they're two different things, and we have to find God. We have to be finely tuned instruments for God to work, and the way we do that is in silence, in reflection, in meditation, prayer, contemplation, all those kinds of things. But don't go looking outside of yourself. Go looking deep within.
What is prayer? Is there a right way or wrong way to pray?
Almost always get this question. There's no right or wrong way to pray. The only thing I would say about prayer is it is the way that you connect best with God. Prayer is not about asking for things to happen. Prayer is about deep connection with God. So however you deeply connect with God, if that's through words, if that's through walking in nature, if that's through meditation, then do what connects you to yourself, to love, to the best person you can be. That's prayer. We're living prayers, really, hopefully.
How do we reconcile so much judgment and violence in the Hebrew scriptures with the New Testament and our current day and our progressive beliefs?
I'm going to say that our understanding of God hopefully has evolved and will continue to evolve, And I will say that faith and faith traditions are living traditions. They're not dead traditions. They're constantly changing and evolving. And I think in the days of the Hebrew Bible, or what we call the Old Testament, people had an understanding of God that may be a little different than what we understand today. They understood that when they believed that when they went to war, well, we have the same thing. Some people believe that when they win a football game, God is on their side. That's not really how it works. It was a much more violent culture, much more living with the land, and it was much more tribal and that sort of thing. And so there was an understanding of God as a tribal God at that time. And if God was for you, you'd win at war. If God wasn't for you, you'd lose at war, that kind of thing. Do I think that was God? No, but I think a lot of the things that we think today aren't really God either. I think that's just how they understood God in that time. And I think we understand something differently, or hopefully we do.
Jesus said, "Love your enemies." That can be dangerous. Are there limits?
I've never had that question. That's really good. This is really difficult. Remember many years ago when, what was his name, Dale in Lethbridge, his son got shot.
Oh, yeah.
And he right away, within 24 hours, said, we love the young man who shot his son. Pardon? Dale Lang, that's it, Dale Lang. That is extraordinary. I think that was extraordinary because he could very well have set up a people would be on his side to say he's my enemy, right? Mm-hmm. He said instead, we will love him. We will love him into wholeness and health. I think that is really difficult. And it doesn't mean when you love somebody, you condone their behavior, because you can't condone that kind of behavior. And it doesn't mean that you allow him, that kind of violence or anger to persist. The problem with not forgiving is the pain we bring on ourselves when we don't forgive. It doesn't mean you have to have a relationship with somebody when you forgive. Mm-hmm. However, we were called to move beyond our human condition and love anyway, even if we perceive them as our enemy. And you'd have to define enemy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do we know about what happens after death for the spirit, both with our modern-day knowledge combined with biblical texts? We interpret things differently now than in the past. The question is, what are they doing up there?
Oh. What are they doing? That presumes we're talking about humans. What do we know about death and the afterlife? Nothing. That's the honest answer. We've never been there. We don't know. Some people have had experiences and have come back to tell about them. We don't know what that means. Our faith tradition tells us there is something after this. And I do think there is something after this. I don't think we remain humans, because who wants to be human for eternity? So our faith tradition tells us there is something after this. If we are spirit having a material experience, then one would assume, here's my best story. My grandmother, when she was 92, I once asked her, what does it feel like to be that old? And she said, honestly, I don't feel this old. Mm-hmm. She understood that her body was aging. She understood that it was dying. But in spirit, she never felt like she was old. She never felt like she had aged since she was a child. So here's what I think. The spirit never ages. It remains forever young, eternally young. The body will age, die, decay, but I think the spirit lives on.
What are they doing up there?
Pardon? What are they doing up there? I don't know. Spirits cavorting, yes, playing with dogs, cats too.
Yeah.
Playing with, pardon? Definitely cats,
there's
yes.
Definitely cats, okay. How do we share our faith in this day and age of people who don't believe?
You live it really, really well. If Christians cannot be identified in a crowd of people as more loving, more generous, more gracious, then we're not even living our own faith, let alone sharing it with others. So I think the best thing we can do to share our faith is to live it really well. And then when people ask us why we experience more joy, or why we can forgive, or love our enemies, or turn the other cheek, or whatever you want to say, we can say, it's because we follow the way of Jesus. That's it?
Do we have time for any opening the
floor? Yes, if that brought up other questions.
Did anybody think of something
get triggered
as we were reading
for
these?
Another question?
No? Oh,
Jody. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point, Jody. Anger is a normal human emotion, and it's a necessary human emotion. And I think we need anger sometimes, righteous anger, and we need ways to move through it to something healthier. But yes, anger motivates us. Anger is a great motivator to do some things, to change situations, to compel us to do justice and that sort of thing. But when we hold on to anger against somebody, an enemy we talked about, or against somebody who has harmed us, the real problem is when we hold on to that anger and unforgiveness, it begins to fester in us. And I say to people, the thing you feel strongest about is the thing you are most connected to. Because our strongest emotion connects us to the people we feel that emotion toward. So if you have a very strong emotion about somebody, like love, you are connected deeply to that person. And if you have a very strong emotion towards somebody like anger or unforgiveness, it will fester in you and it will overshadow all other relationships. So anger is good to a degree, and then it begins to harm us. So how do we move through it? That's process. That's recognizing our feelings, what's generating those feelings, why we are feeling this way towards people. And I'm not saying people don't do horrendous things and anger is not justified in those situations. It's just it needs to be resolved at some point in time because it will do damage. I was just listening to something about trauma. And many of us have experienced trauma in our lives. And if we don't deal with the trauma in our lives, we set boundaries around our trauma and we hold it in, especially children, because if you don't hold in your trauma as a child and you let it spill all over your relationships, that's not healthy for a child. So they protect their trauma by holding it in. But it causes all kinds of issues later in life, addictions, mental health issues, even immunity. Deficiencies, that sort of thing, anger, and emotional stuntedness. So we need to deal with the trauma that we experienced as children and let it out. Otherwise, it calls, and some of that is anger. We need to go through a stage of anger. Anger is a stage of grief and of letting go as well. So anger is important, just can't hold on to it. Ivy. Yes. Oh,
I'll just repeat that.
Yeah, please.
So some people get through anger by having pity for the other person.
Yeah. So one of the things about having pity for the other person is then I think we set ourselves up, and I don't know how you feel, Ivy, about this, but we set ourselves up as being better than that other person when we pity them, or we think less of them, or we just say they can't help what they did, and that's letting them off the hook. We don't need to pity other people. We should never pity other people. We can have compassion for or empathy for the other. But yeah, you can't get over your anger by putting somebody lower than yourself or putting them as less than yourself. The anger that you experience is your anger. It's going on inside of you. It's really, in the end, not against them. It's about what you're holding in. I had another question. No, sorry. It was Dale Lang. And Dale Lang was in Lethbridge many, many years ago. Some people might remember the story where his son was shot at school by another young man. And he forgave the other young man right away. That's got to be the toughest thing. I can't even imagine it, but no. Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you for your very astute, insightful questions. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you.